The episode you're about to listen to is a special edition of The Startup Show, recorded during Grit Daily's live event at South by Southwest. Here we have an expansive range of topics and featured experts from various industries. Enjoy.
All right. Well, thank you for joining. I'm Kayla Kamali, and I am a celebrity host here with Ashley Bailey and Danny Tomsett, and they are going to be talking about their new product.
We are. We're going to be talking about unique digital humans and AI in the metaverse today.
And they are going to go into the details about where the applications apply for the enterprise world and how this is going to reinvent the future of animation models and 3D studio arts in general.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, especially because of your background as well and what you're doing. Don't hold back from hard questions. We're looking forward to kind of digging a little bit more into as well, like what it's going to be experienced like in 3D, you know, modality, right? Like whether that's through XR, VR, AR, but also gamers as well. I'm curious to get into some of those topics. So let's do that.
Absolutely. So background on me, I run a generative AI gaming company. We are on the language model side, but also world building. So consumer facing product, but there's definitely a lot of overlap, especially with the emotional side, the kind of integrating with like trying to bleed that edge in a non, what's that word where there's the cavern of
the uncanny valley.
Uncanny valley, thank you. Yes. Yeah. No, trying to like just skip over that part. You know, we go straight to the like immersive realistic experience. So
awesome.
First off, I guess I'd love to hear a rundown of like what the product is and like, you know, what your big goals are with it.
Yeah, so digital human, the reason obviously we went with digital humans, it was initially termed digital human for high fidelity, high realism in CGI. And that was an industry term for some time. The rest of the world didn't really understand that. And then when we got hold of digital humans, we knew that they had huge potential for real-time interaction in day-to-day life, not just in gaming, not just in movies. And so we obviously took that category and made it far more AI-centric around how do you animate, how do you create an experience in milliseconds based on what someone's talking about, not scripted, not motion capture, like something truly dynamic that feels hyper-personalized and meaningful. And obviously the word avatar is used in so many different contexts. We also felt like digital human was important to create a new category that represented this. And our focus really was on the basis that we use self-service like more and more every day, right? Like if you think about how you travel on an airline now, the mobile apps, the way that you booked your flights, it's a good example of how digital and machines are invasive in our life and also super helpful in our lives. And I feel like the missed opportunity when we created this company, the thesis was the missed opportunity was that emotional connection that you can create through human touch. And when we remove the human element from brands and experiences, we're actually left with a lot of like information, search, logic. And whilst that's useful and helpful in many ways, you know, if you can create emotional connection and self-service channels, you can change the game. And we've done this now with obviously hundreds of brands, and we've seen them increase conversion by up to like 5 times higher conversion. We've seen, you know, training outcomes 90% better through having an interaction that feels more personalized and conversational. So I think the world that we're stepping into now of AI is making all this possible. And so that's really exciting. And then, you know, talking about today, then it's like, well, these are a lot of interfaces that have been around for a while, these flat 2D interfaces. Mm. So now what does that look like when we move some of this power, this capability into spatial computing, 3D environments?
Right.
And so that's the next frontier.
Yeah, literally the next dimension.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's fascinating. I'd love to dive into how that works and what gives you that competitive advantage, because the idea of just speaking characters into existence, like that full comprehensive, you know, they understand and can parse language, but they could also behave and respond in a way that is completely realistic and relatable for the end user, and like tying that into like the sort of like brand identity, and like making a character that's emotionally captivating enough for people to draw into is very cool. But I just right off the get-go, I'm like, that is computationally intensive, right? Like, yes. You know, the animation problem, I, as far as I've known up until now, I thought had not been solved. So this is fascinating for me from that perspective. I'd love to go into that. And then maybe Ashley, I could talk, if you'd like to talk more about kind of what that looks like at the end users for the brands, and like what those experiences that you've either worked with already or are planning to do in the future looks like.
Great. Well, let's start with the technology. So in 2016, we actually pivoted out of a video tech company, and we were solving for another complex problem, which was interoperability between video standards. And we were doing this in such a way that we could connect anyone on a browser into any contact center. And it was in that we discovered, obviously, the video agents were never going to scale well in contact centers. We worked with a number of clients, and that became a real big challenge. And so when we discovered that, we became fascinated with the ability to create a digital person on the end of that video call. And we had a client, the Australian government, with a really hard problem helping 400,000 people with disabilities navigate government systems and information. So they were willing to invest to prototype this with us.
Yeah.
The prototype went phenomenally well. It was on rails. It was certainly not what we're talking about today, but it validated.
Like Ruby on Rails?
Yeah. Like Ruby on Rails. It was really about, you know, understanding what people would ask and then scripting out an actual response, right? So it was like old school animation techniques,
wow.
Right? You'd motion capture and you'd do these things. And so, but it validated people loved the experience and it was super helpful. And so it became really important to me that this is where we're heading. This is what we're going to do. So we became an AI company from that point on to really focus on solving that problem. And I knew that the technology, now to answer your question, that was going to be key to that was we can't have animators. We can't script answers. It's never going to work. It will never scale. It's operationally hard. So we need to develop AI technology that will support an animation system that is able to take text and audio and combine the two to create a decisioning process that enables the digital human to actually have a level of context on how I should behave, how I should speak. And there are, I would call it like biases that you actually bake into that support personality, right? Like I'm already trained to be more empathetic. Therefore, I'm going to be taking that text input from like a large language model, and I'm going to view that from the lens of someone who's already highly empathetic.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So the animation skews certain ways. We have obviously customers who don't want a lot of negative emotions, so we can bias those out, right? So that digital human can be more positive and happy and just, you know, play in them all, rather than disgusted. So those controls become something that you can obviously train around the digital human. And then, you know, from there, you know, where we are today, I think that the hardest thing is, you know, it was 3 years of R&D to get to that point. And the hardest thing you touched on, uncanny valley, right? So you can create something that looks really good until it moves. That's really where Uncanny Valley gets hard, right? And so we had to really move from, you know, AI generating and creating animation that was dynamic and autonomous in a way that people still felt like it was natural, like I enjoyed having that conversation. I think that's the hardest problem to solve, and it's probably why we stand above most of the competition today, because we've been able to figure that out and obviously continue to try take that to new levels, new aliveness, more personality. So that's on the tech side. Do you want to talk about the brands?
Yeah, from an enterprise perspective, they start to see scale, connection, you know, improved conversions, improved customer service, or improved net promoter score, rather. And from an end user perspective, because you touched on that too, it really starts to end up being a better customer experience, you know, and better experience with the brand. And it's not to say that humans are not in the loop, because they still definitely are. But they're having an experience with, say, an agent or something like that, that's a digital human first, and getting a lot of what they need ahead of time, so that when they are talking to a human or the real agent, so to speak, everyone's kind of all happier, because a lot, you know, a lot has been already kind of hashed out by the time they're talking to a human. So,
That's interesting. And if you're able to say, are you working with any people right now? What stage of development are you? And is this also kind of geared towards that customer service area, or is there kind of, I mean, it sounds like there's so many broad applications here. So
yeah. We primarily focus around two areas: sales and marketing, and training.
Mm.
So that's our two key use cases that we focus on. Yeah, we're working with many, many clients. I mean, I think we have over 60 clients now that have in-the-world deployments, working with their customers and getting great results.
Gotcha.
You know, our recent launch with Qatar Airways with Summer was really exciting, and how they've created a virtual flight crew.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
It's a small brand. And like some of our customers, like Deutsche Telekom, are doing some incredible things, helping people, you know, make better buying choices around their broadband, wireless access points in the home. They're now moved into, they have a digital human called Max that's helping people with their cable service.
Wow.
And providing support in that area. And we have a number of, you know, examples in training and helping, you know, doctors actually practice soft skills. And working with digital humans to really improve the conversation and the style that you bring to a patient. And also helping students. We can't talk about this brand just yet, very well known brand, but helping students learn new skills, tech skills, learn how to interview for a job, and they practice with a digital human interviewer. The impact of what we do is not just about making money, you know, it's actually really making a difference. And that's what I love about our company.
That's fantastic. It sounds like you can't talk about it, but that would have been one of my questions as well, of like, how are you considering, like, you know, this is such a robust and like, it looks like you're covering all of the bases in terms of application. How could this, you know, as it scales could scale very rapidly, how could that affect people as a cognitive technology? How could it affect, you know, certain mental disorders as well?
Mm-hmm.
And so are you doing any research grants as well, or do you have like a research team that you work with to help on that kind of runtime, like real time testing and making sure that the product is really helping people in the long run?
Yeah, we have several partnerships with universities, so that's been a key to our research in the early days, especially as we're thinking about what this needs to be able to support. And obviously our first customer was working with people with disabilities, and there's a range of challenges that we just knew nothing about. And the reality is, we're not experts in a lot of these areas, right? And so we decided very early on that we'll build this as a platform so that experts can take our technology like an ingredient and plug that in to what they're doing, because they know the problem that they're trying to solve intimately.
Right.
And it would take us forever to catch up. And as you said, there's so many broad uses for this technology that it's better that we deliver it up as an API. And really make that easy for developers and customers to plug into their products and services.
Really?
Mm.
So on the API side, that's quite a lot of metadata to transfer over. So when you work with partners, it's probably a lot of integration, building out like the existing models on their end, and then do they have to just run inference at, like, is there a lot of runtime inference required for this, or is it kind of pre-training and then kind of
no there is runtime inference yeah. I mean it's, it is right. computationally heavy compared to, like, say a standard web app or something. Mm-hmm. right
yeah.
You know, because it's real time, that also adds to the computational load, right? So you've got to do everything in a matter of seconds.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we obviously have to solve for that. And part of the reason I think we work with enterprise and focus on that is because the problems we solve have a much higher cost if they don't use us, if that makes sense, right? So if they're hiring people to try to do that. One, a lot of them can't even find people. So talk about, like, doctors and nurses, not enough in the world to even support the needs out there right now.
Hmm.
And then the cost of not doing anything is, like, readmittance into the hospitals. People not actually getting enough information, not enough help. They take themselves off medication or whatever that looks like. They end up back in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Costs over $100 billion a year for the system here in the US alone. So there's a computational cost, but it's insignificant compared to some of the problems that we solve around that. So that's an important factor, I think, in what we do.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good consideration. So you mentioned kind of touched on healthcare, travel, and education, and sales and acquisition as well. So you guys must be a pretty big company. How large are you? What date was it again that you made that official pivot?
Yeah, 2016.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not a large company. You know, we're still startup stage. You know, we're around that 50 person size company, and the majority of what we do is engineering and ops. We've obviously got a small go-to-market team, and we work a lot through partners, as I said. So for us, you know, that's a really, really good proposition because it's a profitable model. It works well because we can offer our technology into partners who offer that out to hundreds of thousands of customers, if not millions.
Yeah.
So that's really great. And obviously we are growing as a team, so it's likely we'll be twice the size by the end of the year. But that is, that is the beauty of a platform is that we can be an ingredient which enables, you know, any of our partners to plug into their verticals.
Yeah. Speaking of that, are you looking into mixed reality, augmented or VR, and have you talked at all with Apple or thought about how you might integrate with the Vision Pro? Because as platforms, like, they obviously have a lot of security when it comes to who they choose to work with and a lot of restrictions on that.
Yeah, totally. And we're not doing anything with Apple yet, but I think that's, you know, probably one of my priorities. I have the Apple Vision Pro. I think it's a fantastic device. I think it's a very expensive device, but it's a fantastic device that, you know, a digital human in that environment could add a huge amount of value. We already stand up a digital human inside the browser inside of Vision Pro, and you'd start talking and interacting, and it's just such a great experience. So I think just having the full 3D awareness, and that's where we're investing, you know, some of our technology as well, is you can put a digital human in a 3D space and it will be aware of what's happening in that space. It will know where the walls are, the furniture. It will know if human avatars are in that space and what they're doing. It will be able to react and respond to what's happening around them. So this is a big piece of research and development, but I'm a firm believer that this new 3D modality where people can experience this type of technology in AI, particularly in VR, I think that's where we want our animation AI technology to evolve to support that really well.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like you're geared up for it too.
Well, we talked about this briefly before, but I think, you know, just little things that I observe in games, like how NPCs walk. It's really painful
for me. People make memes about it.
So we want our digital humans who already have a much more sophisticated way of being and expressing and speaking.
Mm.
We want them to move around a room in a far more natural way as well. And I think, you know, as we complete more and more of the research in this, it will be a super powerful tool for even game developers. It's not a market we focus on today, but I do see that as a market where this technology would help them, because as they start to especially embrace more large language model, like InWorld or Charisma AI, that type of technology needs an animation system that complements it in real time. And I think that could work quite well.
Yeah, 100%. I think as on the consumer side, as a game developer, so we're not B2B, we're just trying to build generative storytelling for players. And we looked, I mean, I still think we might eventually, but we looked into InWorld and Charisma, and the integration was, it didn't seem to apply for us as well, because at the end, we're a 3D immersive space. You have to have those characters, and you have to have that diversity and content agnostic system that brings people in based off of the worlds that they're creating. And so there's a lot of unique parameters that come into play with our system. So this is kind of full package. It would be definitely a game changer, and very much based on what I've seen is the future that it's going for the game world as well. So glad to hear that you're looking at that too.
Yeah.
From a selfish perspective. Cool.
For younger generations too, that are growing up with this technology of, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, a lot of what I've been hearing around the conference and a lot of the talks is that they will call companies out on their bullshit. Mm-hmm. And if something is not up to par or authentic, they will call it out. And we're digital humans, and one of the things that Danny and team have spent a lot of time on is real time and low latency to no latency, and that's going to be something will increasingly become extremely important in that gaming environment and XR VR environment too.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, with brands as well, you see that as the meme is also just, okay, brand. But if you say that to a person who's just like, ouch, wow, that hurt. You're like, oh, well, hold on. I didn't mean it. Yeah, that's that.
I have a question for you, if that's okay.
Yeah.
What's your feelings on, if you look at gaming over the years, there is a clear, with the exception of a few like Minecraft and a few others, there's been a clear demand to continue to increase the pixel quality, right? So for more realism, is realism immersion? That's a good question as well. But do you think there's a level where you think it starts to get to a point where it's diminishing returns?
Yeah, diminishing. I think so. And I think we've already experienced that in our game because... Well, compute is getting faster and faster. That's fantastic. Unreal can has these new systems like Nanite technology and Lumen, where it's level of detail is really dynamic, and you can have high voxel, there are Quixel assets. You can have really realistic, a diversity of foliage and trees and things. But at the end, our users were most excited about just the assets, the actual breadth of the assets and spaces. I think there was kind of a period of overhype with the realistic, that kind of immersive aspect. And now we've dialed it back. So the studio team that we're working with, just the old school 3D, they'll do concept art and the modeling and rigging and animations. we're going with a little bit high-ish poly, not low poly, but it is maybe level of Overwatch or Fortnite. So we're kind of where we've dialed it back. And again, because of compute restraints. I think that suspension of disbelief of being in those worlds where that story and that experience is happening is really what people were drawn to when we released the product. Just you can talk to these characters and you have you're building the story out. Are you familiar with the Mind Story, Dramatica's the story structure of how worlds like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or Harry Potter become so popular? They have they call there's the Mind Story, so it's very personalized. It comes from a psychological viewpoint of the protagonist or the main character, which may or may not be interlinked, but it's like the reader is putting themselves into that space, so it's a lot more personalized. And so you have in every story there's a contagonist and an antagonist and a skeptic and an emotional character. There's a guardian and a sidekick. And there's so there's a lot of different roles that they all fill. And then there's like a breadth of emotion that can grow from there. And you know, it's not set in stone. It's not like a zero or one. It's like this character only reacts emotionally. Like, you know, the most meaningful experiences come from Star Wars when like Spock's like, oh wait, no, he's not just like, he's half human. He's not just data driven. Like there's something like, you know, he felt that. So it's really cool. That's what we're trying to dive into with our storytelling. And so it sounds like, you know, when you're talking about the affect and reactions that your characters have at runtime, it's really fascinating. So I guess that kind of leads to my final question and maybe a bit, it's got a few levels to it, but what do your characters, have a system, like a back-end system about how they might evolve? And you said that they might have certain personalities that affect how they act in that instance, but would they might potentially change over the course of a long term? Or is that something you'll develop over time? Because it's kind of a big question, so.
Yeah. Well, the use cases we focus on today tend to have finite interactions. I think the difference for gaming could be, and maybe there's use cases that will exist that we'll work with in future as well, where they have a requirement for like memory. Mm. It's like remembering the interaction and moving that through.
Yeah, agentic behavior, more agentic.
Exactly. I think in an enterprise, you know, you start having to really get careful around like because it's real world situations that you're dealing with. So now you've got like personal identifiable information. And so privacy becomes a really key thing that you're now trying to manage, because what do you want to save and what do you want to use? And now you've got to be transparent. If you're responsible AI, you want to tell people what it's been used for. And now that adds another level of friction in the experience, because you need people to acknowledge what they, you know. So there's all sorts of these design considerations around something like that that may not need to apply for something like gaming, because you know it's a world that you get to kind of go into. You take the persona of your character on, and therefore you're representing with what you're doing with these NPCs or these other characters. So the technology itself can actually handle that quite well. I actually think that the hardest part of that problem is more the large language model, and whether it's like a knowledge graph behind it or something that's capturing these interactions over time and feeding that in, because on our engine, you know, like our engine is about taking the output of that and saying, I need you to say this sentence, right? Mm-hmm. And then we can say that sentence and we can apply the personality, and you can even instruct that personality to change over time, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
And that can all be done already today.
These micro interactions like that operate across a pipeline of like macro interactions.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, yeah, use a graph like neural net when you have like more and more history of just being like, well, the character's responses would fall under this category, but there's like a certain randomness that they might start changing their mind or change. Yeah, so yeah, it's like kind totally. Of so fascinating.
And you can invoke, it's a bit techy, but it doesn't really matter. This conversation. So you can also invoke through markup language. So just like SSML for speech, you can do the same for animation as well. So you can start to override what AI might determine. Mm. And so that's really helpful if you want to trigger more canned animation as well. So you can load gestures. So if you like pick up this and hand this to you, right? Like that would be something that you could create that gesture in the same way you do it today, right? You would effectively create this animation gesture, and that would then be saved, so you can invoke that and then blend that with the AI. So that actually becomes really fun as well.
That is so cool.
Most, if not all, the digital humans do come with their own backstory too, which is a really fun and creative thing to do with the brand. Yeah. And it's like becomes a big part of their brand, you know, their digital human with their own backstory that kind of ties into the brand's backstory too, which is really fun.
And then that feeds into the large language model. So if people start to ask questions about them and their personality, and so so if it was in gaming, it would be, you know, managed by the game system. Mm-hmm. And then that would feed into us.
Yeah. Yep. That's 100%. That's so cool. Well, hopefully in a few years we can start talking, or maybe even sooner.
Even sooner.
Wow. So we're at South by Southwest. Thanks everybody for listening. Cheers. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thank you.